So today, and when we hit the book of Ephesians, Paul is moving into a place where we are going to talk about three things. We're going to talk about truth, being truthful with one another because we're members of one another. And then he'll take that truth and move it into anger, but not sinning in our anger. If we are not honest about our anger, we're going to be obviously untruthful with one another because many times Christians are told, oh, you're not supposed to be angry. Or we'll say things like, I'm depressed, I'm worried, I'm sad, anything but to say that we're actually angry. And Paul will actually say, be angry. In the text, it literally says, be angry and sin not. And so sometimes as believers, we should get angry at injustice and the things we see around us as long as we use it correctly. But Paul, by saying and sin not, tells us that many times it's pretty easy to sin while we're angry. And so we have to understand the difference of when it's okay to be angry, how to use it correctly. And we will typically only use it correctly when we realize that we are trying to defend something that is good and destroy something that is evil. The sad thing is probably 99% of the time what we defend is ourselves or our own egos, and then we start to destroy and hurt other people. So we really have to ask, are we trying to destroy this problem or are we trying to destroy a person? And I think that's why Paul goes the direction he does, because it all goes back to being truthful because we are members of one another.
Well, welcome back to the table. Mike is back with us this week. Thanks for coming, Mike.
Yeah, hi.
We are talking about Ephesians week 14, truth and anger.
So it's interesting here that what Paul's talking about in this passage, truth and anger, is born out relationally. On two dimensions, right? Vertically, obviously, Jesus being the source of our truth and him being the catalyst for us coming face to face, I think, with our sin and our dependence on him and what he's calling us into. But then also that horizontal aspect of speaking truth in love and manifesting anger in ways that are constructive and edifying. So obviously that translates to our gospel communities.
How do you think we can encourage the first part of this, the truthfulness?
There's times that in our gospel community, because we're full of sinners, that people might be angry, but they're not going to be honest about their anger. Instead, they're not going to share with the person that they're offended with, but they'll share with somebody else. And that's when the anger turns to gossip. I may have made a decision that somebody else didn't like, and I hear about it third hand from somebody else that Mike, he just wants to be in charge. You know, instead of coming to me and saying they didn't like my decision or whatever, this is the lack of speaking the truth in love that can lead to either being hurt or being angry, and then can lead to the sin of gossip or dissension, mm-hmm. divisiveness.
This is where I think in so many ways church culture is like sanitized in a way the Bible doesn't reflect. It's important, speaking of truth, for us to get back to the right. truth of what is actually acceptable and what is part of being human.
Right. How do we live out front with being honest and yet not sinning?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Every time someone does something, we don't have to sit there and say, well, I'm going to be honest because you that angered me when you said this. Oh, it angered me when you said that you were angry at this. Well, I was angered when you said it angered. And then you're just in this spiral.
Right.
There are certain things that wisdom says,
let it go.
Let it go, right? It's like in the message I talk about this where in Proverbs, it says, sometimes you answer a fool and sometimes you don't. Well, when do you know? That's wisdom. Wisdom is the one that says, sometimes you do, sometimes I don't. If it's going to make it worse, if it's not going to make a difference right now, wisdom says, don't answer. Mm-hmm. If it is going to help and make things better, wisdom says, you do answer. I've been in conversations where God's like, you should stop talking right now because that person's not going to hear a word and you're just spinning your wheels. And I'm like, okay. And I just stop. And I'm like, I'll pray for you. I still want to be members of one another as best I can, but this is not going anywhere right now.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the sessions in this training that I was at, they stopped and asked, does anybody feel like they were sinned against in this conversation? And so taking that forward, I'm not saying in every night with that question, but I think there are times where if we could model that mindset a little bit better of stopping in real time and saying, you know, it feels like some tension here, or there feels like maybe there's something that maybe have happened that someone is processing, and I want to create space to like
name it
and discuss it in the room so it doesn't go and leave this place festering.
Right.
And I think, again, not every night, but there might be times when if we really focus on not just the next thing, but stopping and looking back and saying, hey, what just happened?
That's really good. But it's reading the room and what's going on.
Sometimes it's not just reading the room, it's reading yourself.
Yeah.
When you respond. So,
especially with anger.
And that's kind of where I come down to at the end of the message. I talk about that. You know, what are we defending? And most of the time it is ourselves. It's our ego. Think about parents who they're out with their kids and kids are kids, right? And the kids do something dumb and they break something. And all of a sudden the parents are completely embarrassed because of this thing. Anger wells up. They take it out on a kid. They're defending themselves because they feel embarrassed, right? Instead of, you know, maybe the kid was wrong in what they did. You told them no and not to play with that. But the coming to the defense of ourselves first in our own embarrassment does not help fix the situation.
It's actually a really good analogy because you think about the relationship, even in the words of disciple and discipline, attending to the long-term thing, the thing that is going to be most fruitful and not just the reactive. Ah. It's just forever kind of staggering to me with how like therapeutic our secular culture is. I think we still are just so disconnected from our own bodies and our emotions. Mm. And it's like the rhetoric that floats around is not really helping us. Still so often we have such a hard time even identifying like the things that we feel or what's really beneath the surface. And I think there's wisdom in going about that in like a spirit-led, Jesus-centered way.
A lot of things in our own heads that prevent us from trusting Jesus in those moments and
totally
really allowing the Spirit to work. And
but if we're honest, sometimes do we even want the Spirit to do his work? Because I think sometimes when God nudges, it's like, I feel the nudge. I'm going to go do this anyway. Because sometimes we want to lash out. We hurt. We want someone else to hurt. I mean, if you've got to suck it up all the time, at some point it seems like someone needs to know how much I'm sucking up here, right? Someone needs to know how much I'm not lashing out. And again, it becomes self-centered. We don't want to give like God gives. We don't want to give like Jesus gives. We don't want to be imitators of God as dearly loved children. Thank God for grace.
And mercy. I'm just taken back how often my anger is pre-existing, but it comes out because of something minor. In other words, I'm frustrated at something else altogether, but somebody else gets the brunt of it and it pushes. It's that last
the release
straw.
Valve.
Yeah. I mean, like Sunday by the time Sunday was done, I was done. Mm-hmm. I was just so cooked. Thursday night we had training.
Oh.
Weekender.
We had the
Friday,
weekender. Yeah. I had a family a deal weekend. Sunday. I was just, and I'd been with people a lot more than Mike likes to be with people.
Both Mike Harmon and Mike Reed, by the way.
And Michelle, is the feminine and version of Mike.
I'm just like, man.
I had no space whatsoever.
Saturday, I don't want to get up and go do the weekend. And I go and I do it. And I'm like, all right, now what? Because I get totally energized. Sunday morning, same thing. I'm like, oh, man. Okay. And I go and I do services. And I'm like, okay, now what?
Sometimes I'm angry about something, but I wasn't honest about it. And then it comes out somewhere else.
I really appreciate it, you know, the glass of milk story, right? Where it's I really appreciate you went to the heart of worship in that. And yes, there's physical exhaustion and there's mental exhaustion and stuff. And that's all very real. But there's that element of what are we worshiping and what is the idol in front of me that I'm either struggling with or choosing or pissed I'm not at getting. And so there's a lot of worship that I think we could also evaluate as a group together. Mm-hmm. Again, I think there's legit tiredness.
Well, but even in my tiredness, it's like I need to muscle through this instead of being honest as I'm really spent. Mm-hmm. And that's what it took me to get to. Mm-hmm. It's like I needed to own where I'm at, not because I was, you know, in a sense, if I was worshiping something, it was in being strong and being capable and pushing through to the next mile and I'll get through this. Right. Instead of saying, no, I'm done. Not doing that caused me to be the person on edge or the person that was anger is right there at the door. It's okay to push through, but be honest that this is really taxing.
Yeah.
You know,
or we need rest.
I'm a little edgy, you know.
Asking for the Spirit to empower. Yeah, I mean, man, same. And get us through, like, yeah, not on our strength, but on his.
How do we, as people who have, you know, walked with Jesus for a good number of years, and we still don't fully get it, we still struggle with this, how do we help those in RGCs, younger in the faith, to come to a place where they can trust the gospel enough to begin to do this work. Maybe they can be here much quicker than us if we can help model and talk about that.
What you talked about with conviction and the Holy Spirit's nudging, I get there are times where like, ooh, I don't know if I want to go there right now. But coming back to truth, and this has been laid out in Ephesians, like what is the nature of God's care for us? Like it's kind. That nudge is kind, mm-hmm. even though it's uncomfortable to build us up, it is to mature us in the faith. And so I think for one, being open to that and praying for that, even when we don't necessarily want it in the moment, sometimes I pray to want that. I think having kind of an agreement, especially in a Christian community, a family that's confessional, to take those risks and actually point that out for one another. When we have been sinned against, or when there is anger that it is legitimate, you know, we need to speak into one another's lives. I totally related to what you were sharing. Like I felt just spent after this weekend, and John noticed. And last night he like shared with me, and it was a huge risk for him, just knowing kind of his history and how much he can easily just avoid things like that. He was like, this thing you said really hurt me. And it actually played on like an insecurity. And it was so hard to hear that and so hurtful, but yet it was so beautiful.
You said something mean?
Yeah. But you know, he was faithful in trusting that nudge. He took a risk because he knows God's been really trying to lead him into this place. And cool. It was hard for me to hear that, but it was sweet and being able to be forgiven and, you know, be more mindful. And we had, that's why I didn't get to notes last night. We had this big conversation about, we're not Sabbathing. We need Sabbath because this is like, this is what happens when you push and push and push. And
I think those nudges are always in kindness to
yeah.
me. And I don't always take it that way.
Right.
If I don't listen to it, I'm going to break myself, which is sinning. Mm-hmm. And then I usually break somebody else in the process. I drag somebody down with me.
Yeah.
Right. Because of my words, my anger.
Yeah.
Or my cold shoulder or whatever. When God's nudging me that you just need to take a break, you need some rest, or you need to be honest about where you're at, and I don't, then I'm breaking myself because I'm wearing it inside mm-hmm. and I'm being self-sufficient instead of being dependent. I need your help in this.
I think when you really capitalize like on those moments, it is beautiful and constructive. So how do we help our groups, our leaders, I guess I should say, talk about anger in a way that's nuanced and really creates a culture within their own groups where anger can be dealt with and exposed healthily?
All right, so our group has never split like guys and girls, right? And a notes night or something like that. Maybe this is something you do. So
we don't either.
So the group's smaller, yeah. Right? Just a little bit smaller so you can have that more intimate conversation.
I find value in it.
Why do you think that'd be important and for this content?
Because I'm finding that the larger the group is, people don't have to engage and they'll start to have side conversations. And I think maybe breaking it down smaller enables us to deal with things more honestly.
I've always, you know, the sun don't going down in your wrath. Everybody thinks about that. I can't be mad at my wife when I go to bed, which I think is lame, but I mean, yeah. It's the idea of cementing my anger by letting it rest for too long. I need to address it so that I don't let it cement and be, the next time I see you, I've still got that tendency towards anger.
Right.
Right.
Thanks again. We have to defend that unity.
So you sharing about John, right? That does something in this room where the next person's a little bit more willing to share, you know, or thinking about it in that way, or thinking about somewhere where I could go back and either voice something or apologize, you know, like I think just celebrating what the Holy Spirit is doing and what where the nudge is, right? And not just keeping it isolated so that it's, I'm just going to deal with this with just this person, which you should, but then celebrating it communally, corporately.
What's God doing through this yeah, right now?
It's mm-hmm. going to help the rest of the culture shift, I think. Mm.
So this week, be angry, do not sin, trust the nudge.
Trust the nudge.
You want to tell us your story of...
Couldn't miss this anecdote.
No.
Of honesty?
For those that know my son Isaac, he is a very black and white kid. There's no gray with him. And he is also honest, almost to a fault. And so a few years ago, we were on a vacation to Legoland with the Warrens, and we're approaching a ride that splits into two different directions. There's some go-karts that are meant for ages 5 and up, and then the other smaller ones are for ages 4 and under. And the only one who is four and under is Evie. And she was like 4.5. So I'm like, hey, Evie, just say you're 5 if they ask how old you are and go on the big cars with the rest of the kids so we can all stand in one line. And my son hears this plan of ours and decides to sit down crisscross applesauce in the middle of Legoland and start screaming, I will not be part of this lie. Evie and I went on the little go-karts and then the rest of the kids went on the big ones, to which we also found out there were 4-year-olds on the big ones. And the employees did go around and ask, like, how old are you? How old are you? And then there was one kid who was like, 4. So we didn't even have to lie. They were letting the 4-year-olds on that were tall enough or whatever. So fast forward a few years, we're looking at possibly going to Disneyland and we're looking at the price of tickets and stuff. And the kid's age, I think, like caps off at 9 or something for a kid's ticket. And so I said, you know, what about Kayleen and Isaac? Do you think they could still pass for 9? And John Warren looks at me and goes, absolutely not. After Legoland, I will never be part of trying to make one of your kids lie again. Evie had no problem. She was like, okay, I'll be 5. So if you ever need help staying honest, Isaac's your boy.
May we all be as honest as Isaac McCool.